Hey everybody, and welcome to the show. I'm James, that's Katie, and that makes this the first ever episode 33 of Cloud Control. And before we talk about any video games, Kate, I have to ask you, it's the cultural phenomenon. Are you partaking in the Barbenheimer revolution at all in the theaters this upcoming weekend?
Oh my god. Well, I am going to see Oppenheimer potentially later this week. But I, as much as I'm enjoying the memes, I don't know if I'm going to do the Barbie
half. Really? Oh, I'm actually really into seeing Barbie. I can't wait to see it. I think I've heard nothing but like it's very interesting and like what it has to say and its message and all that stuff. And
Together we will do the combo and then we can let each other know if it's worth seeing the other movie.
That's a great idea.
And if you love Barbie, I'll consider going to see it.
Okay, well we'll get back to those at some point later on the podcast. But today instead, regardless of how emotional those movies may be, we may have a contender for one of the most emotional video games of all time, everybody. We're talking about Florence today on the show to start off. Then we will talk about our latest Final Fantasy 16 update, which is the kind of third section of the game as we've been going through piece by piece and talking about our experience with that game. And then we're closing out the show today with a brand new game called, I don't know if it has a real name yet, but we're doing some bad video game synopsis quiz questions to see if I can guess what games Kate has made these horrible descriptions for. So that should be really fun, and I'm excited to try that out. But before we do that, let's talk about some video games, Kate. And this is a game I really want to hear what you have to say, because this is one I've been like, Kate, you should play Florence. Like, I really think we should talk about this on the podcast. I'm so happy we finally did it. But what did you think of Florence?
I think I've owned Florence for over a year now because of your suggestions, and I just keep not getting around to playing it. Oh my god. I mean, it's fantastic. It really reminded me of when I played Before Your Eyes recently. Just because they both have kind of like cute interactive mechanics that kind of work based on what's happening in the story, although Florence is very light in comparison to the craziness that was the eye tracking. But it was like set to what you were doing, which was really cute, especially a lot of the stuff with the speech bubble puzzles. That stood out to me a lot, but mostly just in terms of like, it's a fantastic visual novel to go through, and it's so incredibly human and relatable. And it just really like tugged at your heartstrings in such a way that like, it's not dramatic. It's not like, you know, this crazy stuff is going to happen and it's going to be this like, you know, out of world, like over the top story. It was just so incredibly simple to like a real world experience in somebody, like a moment or like a couple years of somebody's life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other game, when you say that, reminds me of a, like, you know, if I was to draw a comparison, would be something almost like Unpacking as well. Unpacking, you don't get to see the characters, but it's very much like you live a slice of someone's life and you have some very mundane and yet relatable and fun interactions with like little pieces of whatever they do in that point of time of their life. And you get to know them through these little interactions, despite like there's not any real dialogue or anything like that, but they're able to tell these extremely emotional and very impactful kind of stories. So I guess that's, maybe we should say exactly what Florence is if you haven't heard of it really quick. It's a visual novel. It's by Annapurna, so I mean, it's one of their older games at this point, I think. It came out in 2018, so it's about 5 years ago. But it's a little story of a girl named Florence, and she grows up. She's 25, and you do some little flashbacks to when she's younger, but she kind of goes through her life, and it's sort of, I think she's reached the point where she's like, her passion is art, but she hasn't pursued it, and she's working whatever job, and she ends up meeting a guy, and there's a love story, and then, you know, she, you know, the ups and downs of what that looks like and everything. You kind of play through it all, and it covers so much in such a little amount of time, too. It's only about 45 minutes long. And I think it's just a honestly perfect little package.
Yeah, I think so. And I guess, like, should we spoil the story? It's hard to talk about it without spoiling it, right? But, like, you know, it becomes like, yeah, this girl is sort of, you know, she's not unhappy, but, like, she's just kind of, like, you know,
she's
Monday
drifting
and every
kind of
day.
Through like
she's
her
drifting.
Weeks, right?
Yeah, she's kind of not really found a focus or following a passion. And, you know, she meets this guy and he's very much the opposite. He's, you know, pursuing his music. And they end up having this wonderful, you know, seemingly fantastic romance and everything goes well. And then you get kind of the scenes where it's like, you know, it's every day always starts off exciting and they're in that honeymoon phase. And then you get like, you're at the grocery store and you're having an argument. And like, mm-hmm. that's, you mm-hmm. know, that's normal. And, you know, by the end of the game, he moves in later on. You see kind of the ups and downs of the relationship. And then in the end, it doesn't end up working out. And I think one of the most powerful scenes in the game is when he moves in, you kind of sort of like unpacking almost in a very light way. You put things on the shelf. So like his shoes are in a box and she's got her shoe rack and there's a few spots open, but not enough spots for every single pair of his. So you've got to put some shoes out and decide like which ones are getting packed up for later. And it's the same in the kitchen. Like, okay, these spices come out. You know, they've got two toasters now. Like, you know, where is his like?
Did you keep the gold toaster or the silver toaster?
I put the new toaster in and put the old toaster away.
So did I.
It just seemed a nicer toaster. So you're doing that, and you know, like it's such a relatable thing. But then by the end, when he's moving out, you kind of have to do the opposite. So it takes you through those same locations in the house. And you have to remember, like, which of the things were his to then pack up and put back in the box. And it has you, like, do a motion with, I played on my PC, so it was a mouse to, like, close the box back up after you'd initially opened it. And it's just, like, you know, like, it's not a horrible thing that caused them to split up. It wasn't this, like, massive, you know, moment that changed everything, or one of them did something that, you know, ruined everything. It was just kind of like, you know, like the slowly over time, and, you know, it didn't work out. And it was like such a quiet, you know, breaking apart. Mm-hmm. And then she's now living her life. You're back with Florence and living your life without him and what that looks like. And, you know, she ends up pursuing her art in the end. So it ends up really hopeful. And I think my ultimate favorite thing about the game, aside from maybe the speech bubbles, because we should talk about that. But I think at the very end, when she's like going through her things and she's been doing this art career, and she seems very happy and fulfilled, she finds a Polaroid picture of the two of them and she keeps it. And I think that's such a lovely thing of like, you know, it was hard, but she's gotten to the point where like, these are good mm-hmm. memories she can cherish, and you don't necessarily need to want to be with that person anymore, but you can still cherish that, you know, that was a positive time in your life and there's things to hold on to from that. And so she keeps the Polaroid. It's kind of got like a bit of an uplifting, like happy ending, despite it being like, you have to cry in the middle for a little bit.
Yeah, totally. And you know, like there's a lot of different mechanics in the game, despite it being so short and so simple. And maybe we can talk about them in a second, but I just wanted to touch on something mm-hmm. when you talk about the story and like, that's like so important to it, I think. And that's the game's use of color and the way that the mm-hmm. certain scenes change in their color palettes and whatnot as things are going on.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of has four ways that it presents itself. And one of which is like, it's neutral and things are kind of gray and you know, there's not really much else to it. And then there's other scenes where like when she sees Krish for the first time and it turns to like, you know, these musical notes start floating by and within the gray and all of a sudden mm-hmm. those are yellow. And then you see him wearing mm-hmm. like that stark yellow jacket, like on the cover of the game. And you can really tell like in all the scenes where they're together and happy, there's color everywhere and it's really vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
And it even goes further than that. There's some scenes where they're like, you know, you're really connected and it's like got this gold kind of shiny look to it, which is even more colorful than usual. And then perhaps mm-hmm. like even the best one, I think, is when you said those text messages, like the fighting that they get into, the argument, it's just the grayscale with only red. And it does mm-hmm. like alongside the way that they portray like the argument in the speech bubbles, we could talk about that now, is like, I think it does such a great job of like, there's no words, you have no idea what they're saying to each other, mm-hmm. but you know they're fighting and it's a huge disagreement, and it's the pace and the tone and the color and everything all together. It's masterfully done.
Yeah, it is amazing the way of how much they can convey just through visuals alone. Like, yeah, when you first meet, I think they both have a unique color. I think his might be orange or something and hers is more like a blue tone. And you get like these speech bubbles and these little puzzle pieces. And at first the puzzle has maybe 4 or 5 pieces to it. You got to put it together. It's very simple. It's not meant to be challenging, but you put these pieces together and then that's like her response. Cause at first, like, you know, mm-hmm. you don't really know what to say. It's a little bit more difficult to get conversation flowing. But they're in these, the positive colors. And then as you, you know, kind of go out on your second, third date, all of a sudden they're like less pieces because it's just flowing so naturally mm-hmm. between the two of them.
Like you're able to assemble the puzzle quicker and the conversation doesn't have those gaps. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So it's just like simulating this like wonderful flow. Like they're having a great time. They're really connecting. But yeah, then when you get to the fight, you have those like more aggressive colors. It's less positive. It's less like one person than the next. Like they start to kind of overlap, like who's talking at the same time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the puzzle pieces become like, instead of being the nice rounded, like your stereotypical puzzle, they become like jagged and uneven because what you're saying is no longer like, it's like not pleasant anymore. Like these are like harsh pieces that you're fitting together in contrast. And that like blew my mind, like the simplicity of it, but how much that can convey just based on like you're doing the exact same thing, but the presentation and the shapes are so different. Like when you put that like, you know, puzzle piece that's sharp, like, you know, you're saying something cutting, like, oh,
yeah, exactly. And they even make it more complex in another way too. When they're arguing later on, it becomes like, you can scroll to the side. I don't know if it would have been different on computer actually, cause I played it on my phone, but certain
yeah,
types
you can use
like
the mouse to drag it
and you can go like horizontal movement and like, you know, you lose a piece over on the side. It's like you're fumbling around, you know, it's not as smooth as before. And mm-hmm. yeah, it's awesome. And it's not the only time that they have kind of these interesting mechanics too. And one of the ones I think works so well and probably my favorite, maybe aside from the text bubbles, is the one when just after they break up and she's kind of walking and it's that gray, like monotone kind of look. And she's trying to heal from like, you know, the mm-hmm. the relationship that she's lost. And he like, there's like almost like a ghost of him walking beside her. And, and she's just walking and walking. And, you know, when you press the button on the screen or when you tap the screen, she stops and then the ghost like catches up to her and you're thinking mm-hmm. like, what am I supposed to do in this situation? But the mechanic is like, is you're not supposed to do anything. The only thing that can heal that part of it is time. And I think that's mm-hmm. such an amazing use once that clicks in your mind. It's like, no, I actually have to sit and watch this. And like, there's nothing you can do, that you're helpless aside from waiting. And I think like, I love that so much. And despite you don't have to do anything, you know?
Yeah, that was such an incredible moment because it really does play on your expectations, right? Like when you're used to games and you see a button, you're like, okay, I'm going to press this button. Like, what is this mechanic? What does it do? But yeah, it does have to dawn on you and it becomes a really powerful moment when it clicks like, oh, you know, like I have to continue on because he walks slower than you. So yeah, you need to get to a point where you've kind of like, you know, you've healed mm-hmm. over time. That was beautiful, that moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredible game. It's one of those games that I think like everyone could sit down and really have an emotional and like a connection to this game, especially if you've been in a situation in your life where you've, you know, had that kind of connection with someone and you've both moved on, and regardless of how it ended, like it's just such a normal, natural like part of life that gets captured so perfectly in this beautiful package.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I like the fact that it's obviously like the relationship I think is the main aspect of the story, but it's also about like her finding just herself at the end. Like it's not like mm-hmm. the redemption of how the story ends with her finding a new person or like getting back together with Krish. It's like she has come through that relationship and she's just now realize like her passion, like she goes and pursues art anyways. And I think that it's like, even if the relationship is replaced with some other kind of event in your life, that it could still be very relatable in other ways too.
Yeah, exactly. And I was so proud of her then because she really does a good job to support him in his endeavors. Like there's one mechanic that was really cute. You kind of have to like push a button quickly to kind of like push him to mm-hmm. to go to like this music school that he was kind of nervous about going to. And then, you know, like, so she makes an effort to really help him pursue his dreams, but she's not doing that for herself. So then by the end of it, she kind of gives herself the same push that she gave to him, but for her artwork instead. So I was so proud of her.
Me too. I know.
So happy. Like, oh, this is so great.
Yeah.
And the paint's back out. Like, yes.
Yeah, I know. It was great. So I don't know if I have too much more else to say about the game. I mean, I don't want to, it's almost like I don't want to spoil too much more, even though we are spoiling it, because it's, there's just like so many little moments, but yeah. I have to ask you, I have one more question, is like, when did you cry? And like, which points made you cry? Cause I had two, I teared up at two different points. Yeah.
Okay. I cried at the walking part.
Yeah. Me too.
That was the part that got me. I cried there.
Did I not cry? No, I wrote, there's two others. That's right.
Okay, yeah. I cried at that part. And then there were a few other moments where I had, like, I felt like I could cry. But that was the part where, like, there was a few tears. And then I was like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah.
But I think this game is emotional regardless. But I think it hits harder depending on, you know, where you are in
Definitely,
your life at
yeah,
the time.
Yeah.
So I held up okay. I'm in a good place.
So I teared up two times. The first one was when after you push him to go to the music school and he buys her that art set afterwards because he wants to return the favor. Yeah. That's just so heartwarming to me. So I teared up about that. And then the other one was when, you know, later on when there's the other puzzle you're making of like when they're hugging and the
like
pieces
floating.
Are like floating apart. And it's like, no matter how you assemble it, you just know it's like, is not going back together. And like, that was so sad to me as well. Cause you can like, you know, they're hugging at the end, but it's like, there's nothing they can do. What a heartbreaker. Mm-hmm.
It's over at that point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh man. I want to thank you officially for making me play Florence, because I was slightly blackmailed into this. I wanted to play Florence regardless, but James, you were like, okay, we're going to talk about it no matter what. So if you haven't played it, it's going to be spoiled.
Listen, yeah, now you see it, it's pretty much worth it, right?
Yeah. And I wanted to play regardless, but I needed that push just to sit down and spend the half hour to do it. And I'm so incredibly glad I did, because my life has been enriched by the experience of Florence.
I like the idea of like podcast blackmail. Like if there's a game of this caliber where it's like, listen, it's short enough and you need to play this, or I'm going to talk about it no matter what. Like, I think that's a valid thing to do. It makes makes it better when we talk about the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's better.
Agreed. Yeah. I'm gonna get you back with something.
Yeah, go ahead. We just gotta make
sure. I don't
know
what it is.
We just gotta hold that high standard of what the quality is. You can't blackmail the other person over something mid.
Yeah, you're gonna be like Kirby Tilt and Tumble. You better play it.
Oh my god. Okay. I promise you I won't do that. I promise. But you know what? You better keep playing, and I'm gonna keep playing it too. Our next game for today, Final Fantasy 16. That's right. We're back again, once again, with the third part of the game. So we left off last time, Kate, you have the synopsis here. So we're back. Take it away.
We left off last time at Phoenix Gate. Mm-hmm. Phoenix Gate 2023, never forget. and then we moved on to, I'm trying to think of the name of it. I didn't write the name
down. It's North Reach?
Maybe? North Reach?
Potentially.
Sounds right. So we meet up with we decide we're gonna go and do some other crystal shenanigans, and we need to get across through that checkpoint. So then there's a few things to do in that checkpoint. You meet the courtesans that seem to come into every fantasy game as your helpers. That's such like a trope at this
totally,
point, right?
Isn't it? Yeah.
And you know, you see that town. It was kind of interesting because this town is like the stereotypical zero tolerance for bears and like the most prejudiced area we've been to.
I was gonna say, like, it makes a huge difference being around there. Like, everyone is just an asshole to you the whole time. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Yeah, you walk by people in a marketplace and they're like, oh, I'm not selling to a bear. Like, you don't even approach them and they're like chirping you.
I think
as you
the
walk
nicest,
by and
the
like,
nicest person was like, give me your money and get out. And it's like, oh, thank you. That's so nice of you.
I feel so respected. It was horrible. And like, you're walking around alone as a bear, and you're assumed that you're on an errand. Like, that's the only reason that a bear would be out alone, is because they're doing something for their master, and like you are expected to just be in like someone's business, and people will stop you on the street, and like it's not like the regular side quest that sits hideaway where you're like kind of on staff and they're like, hey, can you help me out? It's like, oh, I got a job, do this, and you're like, mm-hmm, oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like sometimes aggressive. They'll give you a break only if they notice that brooch you're wearing, which is like,
yeah,
I mean, that's shoddy. I mean, those people are like so prejudiced, like aren't they gonna just take the brooch off and be like, oh, he wasn't wearing it, we, you know, like, mm-hmm. I don't, it seems like such a shoddy system, but I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a game.
So I kind of felt like this area, despite it being an interesting town, was maybe like a little bit of the lull point, because it was a lot of like, we're waiting around for Jill and Sid to also arrive, and then it's like, oh, you know, like do a few things around town while you're waiting, and they were, you know, the side quest variety, more so like, please go deliver these to various merchants, and you walk around town.
Yeah,
but once you leave and kind of head out into the field in the area more so, you hit the two best side quests in the entire game that are not optional. Well, I mean, technically they are, but they shouldn't be. Because holy,
man, that I mean, where do you want to start? Which is worse, do you think? Which is worse? I mean, I think the boy and the sun is worse. I did them first.
Yeah, I did the find my pet quest first.
Okay. Yeah,
which I think made me more gullible to fall for it because I hadn't done the second one yet.
Okay, you take that one, and I'll go for the boy and his dad after.
So you meet this lovely little girl on the road, and she's concerned, and she talks to you, and I don't even think she even calls you a bearer. So I got the impression, like, oh, this little girl, like, she's just so worried, she didn't even notice. She's like, my pet's gone, like, it's gone missing, like, I know not to bring them out, you know, out and about during the day. And I'm like, oh no, your pet. And I'm thinking, like, maybe she's got a chocobo. She's like, can you help me find them? They're probably missing and lost. So you walk over. There's some nice wheat fields, lovely area, got some windmills. And you walk over near the windmill and there's a dog bark. And you're like, oh, there we go. This girl lost her dog. And as it turns out, the dog is barking at like a straight up dead from that stone curse of being overused bearer laying behind the windmill. And then the girl comes running and she completely ignores the dog. It's not her dog. She's like, oh, there she is. Oh no, she's gotten like the stone curse. I'll have to get a new one. And there's just like zero regard for this having been a human being, like referred to as a pet, like just some plaything that the kid like overused the magic of and literally killed her by making her
unbelievable,
you know,
right?
It was insane. And Clive's looking there like, he has the same reaction you do. He's like, what the fuck?
I know. He gives her a lecture afterwards. Yeah. Too, and you're like, well, I hope she takes it to heart, because she's clearly been like just brainwashed by this town that she lives within, you know.
Yeah, so she kind of like, you'd like to think she takes it to heart a little bit, but it was quite shocking.
Now, do you think she's the sibling of the other child in the field?
I mean, playing around if with not, his dad. Her parents are relatively similar-minded.
Yeah, no kidding. Because the other side quest, real quick to go through, you come across this man very near where you meet the girl. He's on the road, and he kind of points you in a direction and says, oh, my son, he's over in the field. He's getting attacked by this wolf. And you're like, oh, God, okay, well, I guess I'll help you, whatever. It's a child. So you run over, and you see, sure enough, there's a little boy with a wolf like standing right there barking and whatnot, and you run in, and like obviously you're Clive Rosfeld, like this wolf is dead and no time at all, and the little boy, he just starts tearing you apart. He's like basically like swearing at you and saying like, why did you do that? And then you realize like there's actually a pile of like three dead bears that are sitting on the ground, because these people for fun are using trained dogs to like lure bears over and getting their dogs to maul them to death for entertainment. And like, that is what they've been doing. It's like unbelievable. Like, that's so sick. I didn't even know what to think after that. And I did that one before the little girl. So when the little girl was like, I lost my pet, I was like, I fucking know what your pet is, little girl.
Yes. Oh my God. It was brutal. Mm-hmm. Like,
we're laughing, but it's like, it's not at all funny when you're playing it.
You have to laugh because of how just outrageous it is that these are just like two completely skippable side quests. You get like 10 gil from doing them each. Like, they're totally just like completely unnecessary things to do. They'll take you at most 5 minutes to do. But they are so incredibly, like, just horrific when you actually, like, realize what's going on. And we've talked a lot about, like, how I think the world building has been done really well. But I think, like, these kind of inclusions are really important to make that feel really, like, it's real and mm-hmm. actually happening. And, like, this is the life that bearers are living. And so it makes the main story where, like, your kind of position now, your goal is that you sort of come to terms with what, you know, your revenge and with Joshua. And now you're basically fully committed to helping Cid try to make the lives of bearers and icons, you know, more reasonable and more liberated, and that they have some freedoms that they can enjoy, and that, you know, they're just not persecuted at all times. And so that these kind of side quests, even though they're tiny and small and, like, in the grand scheme of things, like, not important, they are so good at making you feel really motivated to complete the main storyline.
Yeah, and, you know, I the more I thought about it too, like, I think they're necessary because the main story is so outrageous and over the top and, like, dramatic.
Yeah.
And, you know, it takes its twists and turns that are so exciting. It would be easy to forget the subplot about the bears and their struggles a lot simpler if they weren't so, you know, forthright in showing what that looks like and the discrimination because of, like, just how much it could get drowned out, you know? So I appreciate that, like, I'll never forget these two little side quests, even though the reward was nothing, up against some of these big icon fights just for that reason. And so I think that's very important.
Yeah, absolutely. They're very impactful. I think a lot of games and even movies and you know, books, like, they have these really good ideas, but they don't really show you. Like, I feel like a lot of the time it's like, oh, you know, things are not just, and we've got to change these systems, and there's, you know, some kind of, like, rebellion or, like, an anarchist movement, but they don't really spend the time to show you the quiet moments of, like, what it looks like to live in a world and be one of these people that is being persecuted. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate it for that, where, like, they really are not, like, shying away. Like, they're not just like, we have this great message, now play a fun, you know, fantasy RPG. They're doing the work to also, like, show you how horrible these things are, and that it's not just, like, you know, the bare bones of a plot that they needed to put together for good guys and bad guys. It's really like, you know, here's some nuance to it. Like, this is how average people are affected. And mm-hmm. like, you know, this is largely, you know, why it's important. So,
yeah. And speaking of average people getting affected, maybe this ties well back into the main overarching plot, which is that Cid has come to propose going into the capital because of mm-hmm. what we recently found out about the crystals. I don't think we talked about this before, right? But this is that the crystals draw their power from the aether of the world, basically, which is like the mm-hmm. life force of the world. And by using their magic and drawing upon it for these wars and, you know, the extravagant usages that, you know, people in the capital would use them for, like, you know, lighting a simple fire or something like that, it's slowly draining the life force of the world and thus causing the blight that's like destroying where the other people live. And so Cid's whole plan now is kind of accelerated into, like, hey, we're going to help the bearers, but we're going to help everybody by kind of getting in there and destroying this giant mother crystal by the capital, which is, like, the next big mission that we get to complete during this part of the mm-hmm. game. And so, I mean, I think that's pretty much the gist of it. But this mission was, oh boy, do things happen.
Yeah, I want to say at the top, too, this is a very not subtle kind of, like, you know, take care of the earth, climate change, that kind of thing going on. But it's
like Final Fantasy VII, too, you know, it's a, it's a very, like, Final Fantasy topic, actually.
Yeah, it's a great topic, though. And what interests me, and I want to make a small little note of this, put a little bug in your brain, is that, especially, like, where Cid's hideout was, it's, like, the remnants of an older civilization. And I wonder if there's been some kind of, like, it almost kind of feels like a little, like, post-apocalyptical in some way, right? Like, there's all those, like, monoliths too, and you see them out in the distance when you're exploring some of the wider fields, and they're not really, no one really knows what they're all about, or like what exactly happened to the people before. And I wonder if it's almost like kind of like a cyclical thing, like maybe they kind of caused a downfall as well in a similar kind of way. And now it's like kind of like it's cycled back. It's doomed to repeat itself.
So interesting.
That's kind of interesting. But yes, so time to go to the mines.
So the mines were cool. I mean, I don't know what you thought of the location, but I mean, it was a big change up from where we've been before, which has been a lot of forest and kind of town settings for the most part, and like a little bit of a swamp here and there and some castles. But the mines, you go down and it's like crystalline, like palace walls and like this blue ethereal magic mist all around. And something very interesting you learn about the mist is that they can do, I guess if you're not a dominant, so you're not kind of like you can use magic internally, you can become what's called akashic from being exposed too long to this aether. And it's basically like sort of like being a zombie almost, you know, as you say, it's they kind of lose their mind and become very angry and aggressive. And I love the way that's introduced, because when you're first climbing into the mine and sneaking around, you see, like, you know, you're going through the secret passageway with Sid and yourself and Jill. And over to the side, you can see there's like this bridge, which is the main entrance to the mine. And you're like, okay, they have guards to like keep people out of this mine. And then once you run into these Akashic monsters that are in the mine, you're like fighting these goblins and dragons and whatever that have been transformed, you realize like, oh no, those people are there to keep the Akashic creatures like out of the main town. And then from there, it only gets like more accelerated. But yeah, it was a very unique area than what we've seen so far.
Yeah, I agree. I really like how the game's using like use of color. Like, I think, you know, it's been very vibrant. It almost reminds me of like a Ghost of Tsushima kind of idea, where each area is sort of like associated with a color, and the mines are just so strikingly blue. Like, there's this energy all around, and it really does feel like a kind of like temperamental and like mystical kind of place you go into. And yeah, the Akashic are, you know, just another horrible exploited group of people, whether, you know, assuming they weren't
they're just mine workers, you know, a lot of them, like they're people who are made to work in the mines by the people in the capital, and this is what's happened to them. Like, it's maybe even worse than the bears.
So it's just this horrible place, like you're going through. It's interesting. I gotta shout out, you fight the boss in here, the Imperial Cannoneer.
I love this
guy. That guy was so funny. He walked up, and at first I thought he was like a God of War troll, where he just has like a massive like slab of something, and I was like, oh, he's just gonna, you know, like big troll slam you. But it turns out to be this like outrageously large cannon, and he's like shooting throughout the fight. And then I think like once you get him into his second phase, he uses it to like jump himself around. And he's just such a ridiculous boss. Like, I really like how they do this, where they have like the really serious, like heavy tones and themes in the game, but then you just come across stuff every now and again that's just absolutely like outrageously stupid and funny.
Yeah, but it's done so well too, because in the world, like, that is not stupid and funny. Like, that's a serious dude from the other team's military. Like, it's not a joke, but you for you, the player you, it is like
It's like Clive's outfit is like hilarious, because like, why are you wearing 13 belts and like the tightest leather pants you've ever seen? But like, it's cool in the game.
That fight was really cool too. And I love like how unique a lot of the bosses are. Like, I haven't really felt a lot of them have doubled up a lot, and this guy especially too. Like, he had a nice mix of attacks, like ranged and all that stuff. And I mean, same with the dragon later on too, when we go a little bit farther. That's kind of the next boss we get to fight. That one had like AoE, like bullet hell moves going on, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, there's like stuff you have to dodge when he flies around. He has like a little laser he shoots and it explodes later, which really, really reminded me of Madeir from Dark Souls. It's like, let's do it in this game too. But he was like, I don't know, it's, they're really fun. Like, I just cannot get enough of the combat system. Like, it's so good. The limit break works really well into it now. Like, you get to use it a few times a fight on these bigger bosses, but it doesn't feel like it's like breaking up the flow. It feels like it really has worked itself well into like how you're switching between your elements at the same time. And like, there's so much going on, but at the same time, it never feels too chaotic that you don't feel like you can keep track of enemies, or like you can dodge at the right time. Like, it's such a good hybrid. And the more I play it, the more just like fantastic I think it feels.
Yeah, it does such a masterful job of, I think, explaining a lot of information to you in a very digestible way, because the game moves so quick, but you're able to easily see, like, the way they have the text come up. It's like precision dodge +1, like precision dodge 2, like, you know what you're doing, even though it's moving so fast. And I think it's because, like, you know, you're only able to pick 2 moves an element, and switching it's easy. You always know which one you're on. Like, it's very well crafted, despite, like, how much it's throwing at you.
Yeah. And there's a lot of really good cues. Like you said, the text popping up is, like, easy to see but not intrusive. And there's a lot of really good sound cues as well with the PS5 controller. Like when your limit break's ready, like, there's a noise for that. And, like, different things coming off of cooldown have little noises that, like, you never... Like, it reminds me similar. Returnal did a similar thing. And I love it because you don't really, like, consciously pay attention to them. They're not distracting that the noises happen, but, like... You notice them on a subconscious level. So it's just that extra little thing that you're, like, you know, always when an ability is ready to be used. It's a really cool little quality of life that I've been seeing kind of, like, trickle into games, and I love it.
Yeah, it's the same thing too when you're using, like, the ignite for your sword when you're holding down square, and then and then it lights up and your like a fire sound comes out of your controller. It is really cool, and, like, it's by no means necessary, but it's such a nice little additional thing for games that can do it. But so, okay, let's get into the crazy part now. Hey, so after we beat the dragon, the Akashic dragon, which I guess isn't the final boss of this area.
Yeah, I've noticed that about this game, and every time there's, like, a big boss, it's like, no, there's another one, like, literally right after that's bigger and crazier.
So it's like a pre-boss, it's like the appetizer.
Yeah, but it tricked me because I thought the cannon guy was the pre-boss for the dragon. But the dragon is actually the pre-boss for what happens next.
Yeah, so what happens next is you walk in, and you and Jill and Sid make it, and you're at the core of the crystal, I guess. And naively, Sid walks up and smashes it with his sword, which does absolutely nothing because this thing is insanely powerful and durable.
And then Clive is so funny. Sid's like, oh, I guess I need a bigger stone. Clive's like, oh, I've got bigger ones.
Yeah. Sid's like, okay, kid. But Sid, you know, transforms. Rama is so cool in this game. Rama is so cool.
I think he's my favorite icon, like, just in terms of design. Like,
thus far.
He's that old, like, you know, like, wizard with the big robes, but he's got this, like, massive chest and pecs. He's just so cool.
He is super cool, and he uses his power to, like, throw that thing, and he breaks the crystal, and I don't know, some things happen, and then this portal, I'm a little confused to, like, what exactly is going on here, but there's this portal that appears, and there's, like, another powerful entity, which I'm assuming is, like, a guardian of a crystal or something like that. His name is Typhon the Aggressor, and, like, damn, if that ain't a cool name, I don't know what is. And he comes out, and you basically have to fight him as Clive, and it's the second time you get to play as Bahamut. Ifrit in the game. I don't know if I liked it quite as much the second time, like, with the Ifrit part, but the fight against Typhon in general was very cool, and I loved the way that he had, like, that second phase where he had all the copies that come in and like, make a stronger version of himself. Like, he is a very cool character. I wrote down as I was playing, I was like, Kate will like this guy.
I do like this guy. He came out and I was like, this is a dude right out of Elden Ring.
Yeah.
He really reminded me of, especially actually the final boss of Elden Ring. But it was really cool. I really like playing as Ifrit. I think, like, a whole game playing as Ifrit would get pretty boring pretty quickly. But I think it's a nice little thing to switch it up every now and again. Like, I just can't get over how nice the weight of him feels. Like, everything kind of feels like it's going, like, slightly in slow motion because he's just so big and heavy, and every swipe is this, like, massive, like, laborious, like, force coming. And
quite sharp enough, like, you know, because he's so bulky.
And like, the fight was relatively, like, simple. Like, he had just some fun moves that felt fun to dodge. I like that you still get the precision dodges in Ifrit style. And then he had some, like, AoE things to dodge, which was kind of cute as well.
That wall move is very cool. It's almost like hole in the wall when you have to move left and right, or, like, playing Fall Guys within Final Fantasy 16. Because that thing does hella damage.
I got, like, dunked by them a few times. I was like, I did the rest of the fight no problem, so it was okay. But, like, that wall was my nemesis. And the first time we did it, I was like, oh, I gotta, like, reach him. And then it was just wall in my face, like, five times. Yeah, but it's cool. And it's just so cinematic. Like, at the very end, when you, like, volleyball, like, slam him with Hellfire.
Yeah.
Like, he's, like, charging it up, and you know it's about to dunk. And then, you know, it's the back and forth of, will you be able to do it? And then in the end, you're like, boom.
It was so Dragon Ball Z, that part. That's all I could think of. Yeah. Is, like, Goku having charged, like, a thing and then bringing it down on Majin Buu or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just so incredibly over the top. And this is a really interesting character because, of course, you come out of the fight after these crazy cinematics have happened. And, you know, you realize that this whatever this entity is, there's still some mystery surrounding it, but kind of has been pulling the strings. Like, they were involved to some degree at the original dragon, like Phoenix Gate.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been, like, the voice you've been hearing in your head. So it's this, like, crazy... Like, you know, we've been kind of strung along with this for a while, because at first, like, you think it's Joshua, or, like, you think it's the Hooded Man, and then you find out the Hooded Man's Joshua, and it's like,
oh. But then you're also kind of the Hooded Man in that one scene.
But you're also kind of the Hooded, and it's so, you're like, there's this mysterious entity, you don't really know where the voices are coming from, but now it seems to be, like, this is some kind of, whether it's a force that's being represented by these... you know, this form that he's in, or that's tied to the power of the crystals, or whether it's like a higher power god more so than an icon perhaps, but
hard to say. But I'm very fascinated to see. And I mean, the thing about this is, like, that creature, whatever it is, wants Clive as a vessel. And I think it's something to do with Clive's ability to use all the different magics, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is, after you defeat him, he still kind of shows up in that other form, and he's like coming for Clive. And Sid, our man Sid, has taken some damage in the earlier fight, but he's not about to let Clive get stolen and taken away. So he stands up, and he's bleeding, he's hurt, and he chucks his spear one more time. And, you know, hits the creature, obviously, takes it out for now, which is great. But he collapses, and oh my god, everybody. Sid, he dies. Oh my god. Unbelievable. But not before giving his lightning power to our boy Clive. And so I haven't got to play with that yet, but that is going to be cool, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I was wondering if we were going to end up getting lightning, or, like, what that was going to look like. But, I mean... it's interesting that it's Sid's death that does it.
Yeah, it was very sad. And Sid goes out obviously like a badass. He's like, let me light one more cigarette. Yeah. He's like dying, and he's like out of a smoke. But you know what? I mean, it was sad. It was emotional, but I really like the scene just in terms of like how Clive and Sid's relationship is portrayed. Like, there's no like. Toxic masculinity involved with that. Like, there's no, like, you know, a lot of time when a character dies and you have a male protagonist, the answer is like, oh, you know, you got to be angry,
you got to avenge
him or something like that. But Clive is just like distraught, he's screaming, he's like, no, like, Sid, and he's like holding him. And it was just such a warm moment of like really believable. I mean, the voice acting is so good on especially the main characters that like you felt a lot of the pain, and it was like similar to Joshua too, like where Clive was just so like, you know, like caught up in the moment, and there's zero disregard for having to be like tough or manly or like, you know, like soldier on kind of thing. It's just these like sad, heartbreaking moments of like losing people he cares about, and it makes me like Clive so much more because of how he reacts. But it was very sad. I kind of guessed it might happen, but there's always that like, oh, maybe he'll be fine. It's Sid, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's such a badass.
I mean, looking back on it too, you could kind of see like they go back and repledge kind of their allegiance to Sid's cause and whatnot, like to work alongside their own sort of journey with figuring out Clive's stuff. And then they go on this one big final mission. Like, maybe we could have seen it coming. But like, honestly, I was pretty surprised. You know, I didn't expect that would happen. In that way, at least. But it was, I think it was a you know, a fitting death, like you said, for a character. And, you know, I like it because it, like, the way they kind of killed Joshua off at the start, even though he's back now kind of by association. I love the way the game continues to have these moments where like pretty major characters die. It's one of the reasons that the game's so compelling in the story sense, because like very few characters are fully safe.
Yeah, like the stakes have been raised.
I do have one complaint though about that scene before we get along, and like I think it's I don't know. I'm curious to see what you think about this, but I kind of have an issue with how like Jill doesn't get to do anything. What's going on?
Yes.
So like yes. For as well as they portray Clive and like he's not toxically masculine in any way, and like, you know, he's, well, I shouldn't say in any way. I'm sure you could find instances of it, but you know, he gets along well with Sid and they talk about their feelings. But like for as good as the game is about portraying like a good version of that, and for its great messaging about like obviously what it's saying about prejudice and whatnot with the bearers, I think it's doing like what is Jill doing if she's not the female lead? When you compare this to Final Fantasy VII Remake, which is like a very recent contemporary of this, like Tifa and Yuna, and like they're, I mean, Cloud's the main character, but those other characters as well as like lots of the male characters get a lot of screen time and they're like fan favorites, and Jill is a cool character. Like she's a dominant, she's Shiva. Why does she need Clive to like protect her from that explosion? Why is she not crying and yelling when Sid dies as well? Like she's just as much a part of this as Sid. And even before that, when they're like planning the mission, you know, like she's just kind of standing there and letting the men talk about what the plan's gonna be. Like she's just as powerful as they are. Like, you know, I feel like she's being really wasted here. And I would love to see her have more of an impact on the story, aside from like being there to just nod along with Clive when he makes a decision.
Yeah, I completely agree. That has been written down as my one big complaint with the game as of where we are, because it doesn't make any sense. And it's not like she's removed from the conflict. Like she was literally a captive slave.
Yeah, being used to murder people.
Yeah, working like because of her ability as Shiva. So she's like, this cause is incredibly like personal to her, in addition to like just believing in it. And yeah, her she doesn't seem to really have any lines aside from like, oh, I'm gonna support Clive. And it's bizarre. Like she seems like the kind of character, like based on what she says, you'd think she was the character that like, you know, Clive came home to, and you know, it was like, oh hey, like, all right, yeah, I'm home now, I'm heading out again tomorrow. And she's like, okay, good luck honey, like have a good time. But like, no, she's right there, she's equally as capable, she's equally as like committed to the cause, and she's doing like essentially nothing. It is really incredibly bizarre because of like, even Gab has like more
he has more lines than she does too, right? Like, she says so little for the amount of like her screen time ratio to like voice lines must be the worst in the game by a mile, because she's around a lot.
She's even with you sometimes when Sid isn't, and like hardly has anything to do. It is very strange, and I think you're right. I think she's a very interesting character. I think she's got a great design. I think she's got an interesting backstory. I think her and Clive's relationship could be interesting, but she's just such a non-character 90% of the time.
She's got to really be one of the most underutilized main party characters I've ever seen in an RPG. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's bizarre the way she doesn't do anything. But I hope it changes. Mm-hmm. Maybe Sid's death will open up room for her to be included a little more. Who knows? So one more really big thing happens before we're at the end of this section that we're talking about here, which is that our boy Joshua shows up again, acting like a total badass. And then every time we see this guy do any kind of magic, it's like, holy shit, okay, he's super powerful. And I really hope that we get to play as him again later in the game. Like, do you think maybe Clive will get captured, or like maybe it'll switch again? Because I would love to try out Joshua's moveset with like some of the things that he's able to do. But he ends up taking, you know, tricking basically that Ultima being at the same as Ultima, and capturing it in a cage of phoenix feathers and fire, and sealing it within his heart, if you can imagine that. That sounds like a Kingdom Hearts plot line, but it's true. And so I'm sure that won't turn out well for Joshua in the future, holding a creature like that within his heart, but he's doing it to save Clive from being sort of taken over as this vessel. And so I think it's really cool that Joshua is looking out for Clive, even though he was originally Joshua's shield. I think it's a nice nice reflection.
I agree. I think that's what I'm so interested to see where Joshua comes into it. I completely agree, playing as him is cool. Like the phoenix thing is so neat. Like when he uses his fire, little phoenix feathers, like, you know, like float around and scatter to the ground, and even uses them as a trap later. Like, he is such an interesting character, and I really hope we get to kind of fill in the gap of, like, what has he been doing? Like, he's clearly been, you know, learning about this entity. He knows, you know, way more about the world than Clive does.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of almost got like a mystical, like otherworldly knowledge, like, and he's got like the robes, right? He's almost taking on like the wizened old, like wise mentor kind of role. Yeah.
So I have some theories.
Kind of game.
I have some theories. Okay. Do you want to finish your point and then I'll tell you, or
no. Okay. I want to hear.
Okay. So two theories I got. Number one of them is, this is like just total guess, but I think because they keep mentioning he has a partner, it's like you know, he keeps working with that partner they mentioned, right?
Yeah.
So I think because there's two of them, that makes me think we are more likely to play as him at some point in like a flashback to see what he's doing. Because mm-hmm. they're like, oh, he's, now it won't be weird that he's like talking to someone. We're like expecting him to be around someone else, so the dialogue will be fine.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that what if, because, you know, the icons are powerful and they like grant other abilities than just their attacks. Like if you raid Rama's, it's like he has like a wisdom about him that others may not.
Mm-hmm.
And what if something for the Phoenix is that you kind of are able to pass down knowledge from other previous Phoenixes, because it's like rebirth. So because he's the Phoenix, he's been able to learn a lot about the world and kind of how it all works through like that knowledge. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
I think that would be really cool. I really hope that second one is right. That's such a neat thing. And like, also, yeah, like Joshua died, but he's back. So like, I'm assuming that like the rebirth was mm-hmm. Phoenix related as well. So yeah, there's clearly a little more going on with these icons. And I think it'll be interesting to learn about other ones as we go, kind of like, and you can pace it along with Clive, like understanding Ifrit more, because every time we kind of come to these big moments, like he's sort of like, you know, grasping his role a little bit stronger with each time and learning how to control it. But I think there's also going to be an element of like, yeah, learning how to understand Ifrit in addition to just like having mastery of the powers. So
It's kind of like a Hulk situation, honestly, because it, like, he was having trouble. He's like, he wasn't sure if he could call the power when he needed it. And then of course it happened when he like, he was in that dire need situation. But I'm assuming you'll get to a point where it's kind of like, he's got the ability to just turn it on when he needs it as they grow.
So yeah, I think the more we play, the more we learn, and the more questions we get, and the more incredibly excited I am to continue down this path.
Yeah, it's we'll be checking in again, that's for sure. Next week we'll see, but if not, within two weeks episodes for sure, because I'm not stopping.
Well, maybe that's when your lightning powers to try out.
Exactly, I'm very excited. Okay, well, let's get to the last part of the show, which, like we said at the top, I'm very excited for. We are doing a brand new game. It is a bad synopsis game quiz. So, Kate, do you want to explain kind of what you created here, I guess?
Yeah, so basically, it's quite simple, but basically I have written out for five different games. Actually, this is a lie. I've written out for four different games a technically correct but very poor synopsis of what you do in the game, or kind of the main plot line. And the idea is that based on these horrible synopses, if James can guess which game is being described, but as a fun bonus point, one of these synopses is actually just the real synopsis for the game, which I thought was bad. But I did. So that'll be a fun little thing to guess as well, which one you think is the real one that I didn't create.
That's a great twist. That's a great twist.
All of the other ones.
All right.
So, if you let me know when you're ready, I will read the first one.
Yeah, I'm ready whenever. Play along at home, everybody, if you want to.
All right. Let us know. This is our first game. Father, new to the area, becomes a victim of assault after a failed break and enter was committed at his winter cabin, committed by a delirious tattooed delinquent who incorrectly racially profiles him.
Oh my god. Oh man. You know, like, that's amazing. That's amazing. I'm pretty sure it's God of War. With Atreus and Kratos getting interrupted by Baldur there at the winter chalet. The tattooed man.
Is that your final answer?
That's my final answer. I'll go along.
All right, you are incorrect. That is God of War 2018.
I love it. Okay,
amazing scene with Baldur. Fun little thing you learn at the end as to why he's there.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
I do not think that is the one that is the real description of this game.
I will not. you are correct. All right. So question two, for those keeping score. This one, nice and simple. Doctor shamelessly overprescribes antibiotics.
What? Shamelessly overprescribes antibiotics.
Yeah, this I think is the one I didn't expect you to get, but I thought it was funny. God.
What the hell? Okay, who are video game doctors? Doctor, is Morgan Freeman a doctor? No, not Morgan Freeman. Sorry. What's the guy from Half-Life?
He's a scientist.
What's his name, though? Yeah. It's not Morgan Freeman.
Alex Freeman? No. Gordon Freeman.
Oh, come on. Morgan and Gordon. You can see.
Yeah. Okay. It took me a second to think of it outside of Morgan. No, he's a scientist. God.
I can't think of any video game doctors. This is hopeless.
You're going to feel silly.
Doctor...
You're
Dr. Robotnik?
Silly.
I don't think he describes too many antibiotics.
No, he would have been an easy one to play on for stealing all the animals.
Stealing all the animals?
Well, he puts them in those little, like, jars.
Well, the sirens are on our side, everybody. If you're listening in your car, you're not about to get pulled over.
Oh, yeah, don't worry. It's by my house.
Okay.
My lovely new neighborhood.
I don't know. This is really tough. I don't want to take too long. I'm going to go Dr. Robotnik, but I'm sure there's going to be some...
It is a different doctor from an iconic franchise that rivals Sonic. It is.
Oh my God, Dr. Mario! Of course, of course, because he throws so many pills in the game.
Mm-hmm. Of course, literally all he does.
I like it. Okay, I should have got that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Number three.
They seem so obvious after. So, yeah. This one is: the game is full of cute girls. Will you write the way into their heart? Game is not suitable for children or those who are easily disturbed.
I know what this is. This is Doki Doki Literature Club, which I played a couple years ago. That game is not suitable for children or any sane adult either, in my opinion.
No, very weird. Not.
Okay, I'm glad I got that.
You are correct. Doki Doki Literature Club.
All right. Next
moving
one.
On, number four. Hooded man commits multiple murders to clear himself of false murder allegations.
Oh my God. This just seems like the local newspaper in any like suburban city. This one.
Yes.
I mean, I gotta think it's Assassin's Creed. He's like jumping around with Altair's hood, knifing people in the back. I think I'm gonna go with that.
Okay, but, you were really close. You're on the right track, but it's actually Dishonored.
Oh, Dishonored. Okay. I think, yeah, okay. I can see it.
Yeah.
My answer was
central
good.
Plot there. Yeah. You get framed at the beginning.
Yeah.
You didn't do it, but
good.
You sure killed
pretty
a lot
good.
Of other people. And then finally, James, my favorite question number five. Terrible parent refuses to go to therapy while everyone else comments on the weather.
What? Oh my God, it's Heavy Rain. Right?
Is that your final answer?
Yeah, because the dad is all depressed sitting down there and doing, and then everyone else is like, the rain is coming down.
You are indeed correct. There's Ethan Mark.
I love it. That's amazing.
Correct. That is Heavy Rain.
That's amazing. Loved it.
Now, would you play any of these games based off of these wonderful synopses?
I think I would probably play the first one. That sounds like an interesting GTA plot, basically. You know, like
it really does.
The B&E.
And which of these is the one I did not write?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this. I think it's the Doki Doki Literature Club one. And I just think it's because the word game is in brackets, and I don't know, that seems just really weird.
Yeah, you're right. I should have maybe gotten rid of the brackets when I wrote out my notes versus the slide, shouldn't I? But yes, you are correct. It normally says like this literature club, and
right.
I felt like that was too big of a giveaway.
Okay.
So
okay. Well, for what it's worth, I didn't know you put the brackets in to redact the title. I thought it was just like the game also being weird on its description. So is that
nope? Yeah, but that is the official Steam synopsis for Doki Doki Literature Club.
It.
Which
wow.
is hilarious.
All right. Well, next time I will make some descriptions for you, and we'll see if you can match my score.
Well done. Well done.
What did I end with?
I think that was 3 of 5.
Okay.
Because you didn't get Dr. Mario or Dishonored, but you nailed the other three.
Sounds
I'm
good.
Glad three you got five. Heavy Rain. That was my favorite one.
Okay, make a note of my score. We'll see if we can get it next time. Mm-hmm. Okay, that brings us to listener mail at the end of the show, everybody. We like to close out every single show by answering a listener mail question, as we do every single week. You can write in to Cloud. Ooh, I almost slipped on the tongue there. cloudcontrolpodproton.me if you want to get in touch, or you can get in, you know, write in the comments wherever you want. You can also ask questions and respond to our Spotify question built into the podcast if you listen on Spotify. So that's actually pretty cool. But today's question is from Andy. Kate, do you want to read it out?
Yeah, so this is a nice topical Final Fantasy question. Clive Rosfield would make the best character in what game? But with a small stipulation that no fighting games, because those are just so like iconic for having so many guest characters. And just
Smash Bros. Would be way too easy of an answer. He's very similar to Fire Emblem characters.
Yeah, he would go well into Tekken, I think, because of all the particle effects. That's where
I thought Soul Calibur as well, because you could, you know, have the icons come out as sort of, I mean, any of them could have magic, I guess, but mm-hmm. Yeah. So a lot of ways to take this one. What did you think of?
Well, I have a couple answers that are dumb. And one answer I think is kind of cute. So I would have originally, as a funny answer, put him in Phoenix Wright for like the trial, get the hooded man on trial for Joshua's murder. And it would make
that's amazing.
The ultimate Phoenix Wright trial of like, oh, secretly it turns out he murdered him and he was the hooded man. And so that was a crazy twist.
And it kind of is similar to a Phoenix Wright trial in a way.
Yeah. But then I was thinking, okay, a real answer that he would be good in. And I was like, yeah, like Elden Ring stuff's cool. I actually think a lot of the visuals in this game kind of remind me of Elden Ring a little bit, mm-hmm. which is fun. But I wanted to finally settle on a game called Wizard of Legend, which I think I talked about on the show like way back when. It's kind of like a small indie game where it's kind of like a roguelike where you go through different levels. But kind of one of the main gimmicks of it is that there's tons and tons of different spells in the game, and you can kind of kit yourself out with the four different elemental spells. And I thought that would be cute for Clive because he mm-hmm. is getting all the different elements, and so he'd fit well into that game. And it's just a nice little like pixel action game that revolves around using elemental abilities. And I thought that was cute for Clive, and also throwback to the Final Fantasy roots of like pixelating him for a game.
Yeah, that is cool. I like that a lot. And it's so funny you brought up Phoenix Wright, because I thought about Phoenix Wright too, but then I changed it up and I was like, what about Professor Layton? So that's what I thought of, would be like, you know, it could be like a point and click. You're going around helping Clive solve a mystery as well. It could even be about Joshua's murder, but instead you're going around and meeting all the different people in the town and like helping with their side quests. And it could be like, oh, you know, really dark Professor Layton, like you're still going to find out what happened to the bears laying in the field, but instead of fighting a wolf, you're like counting how many dead bodies or like solving a riddle about it. Like, it would be such a dark twist.
That's on Professor terrific, Layton. But I love it.
But yeah, there was that one. And then the other one I thought, which would be really cool and was in my head because I don't know if you heard the news come out the other day that Insomniac is developing a third AAA game alongside Wolverine and Spider-Man. So they're just insane. But it
made
me
think, where do they find the time?
I know, it's crazy. It made me think, like, how good would Clive feel in Ratchet and Clank? And I know it's a ridiculous crossover, but I would love to see that team take that character and all of his moves and translate it into that cartoony kind of Ratchet and Clank world, and have like the DualSense features with all the different spells and like how they could tune that, because I think Ratchet and Clank has been such an amazing display of like all the weapons feeling so unique, and I would love to see it like that, but with Clive's abilities. I think that'd be very cool.
I can't say that I'm confident that Ratchet and Clive will become a game, but I would 100% play it if it did.
Yeah, Ratchet and Clive. It kind of sounds similar, you know?
Yeah, it kind of works. It's a good spin-off.
It'd be a very weird game, that's for sure. But yeah, no, thanks for the question, Andy. And yeah, I guess that brings us to the end of the show. So in our future, we'll have a lot more Final Fantasy. That's probably what we're going to end up doing later tonight. And that's that. So thank you all for joining us. And remember, this has been Cloud Control, the gaming podcast that's not just good, it's good enough. And we'll see you on the next episode.